You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Rachel Berger is 16. She's a Brooklyn-based reader and writer with a strong interest in gender equality and online journalism. Julia Bloom is 13. She spends many hours a week dancing ballet. She's concerned about negative stereotypes of ballet dancers. Eliana Buenrostow is 19. She's at college in California and is passionate about reproductive justice and sex education. What these three people have in common is that they're all part of a new organization called SPARC. SPARC stands for Sexualization Protest, Action, Resistance, Knowledge. It's dedicated to creating the possibility of healthy sexuality by pushing back on media sexualization of girls and young women. We're joined this morning by a Canadian member of the SPARC team, Ness Fraser. She blogs about sex and teens and has been writing on the SPARC site since May of last year. Ness Fraser joins me on the line this morning from Toronto. Hello, Ness.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How did you get involved with SPARC?
Actually, as soon as I was part of the CBC documentary Sexed Up Kids, and also interviewed for that documentary was Professor Deb Tolman, who is one of the co-founders of SPARC. And she, when the director, after she interviewed me, set me up with the people at SPARC, and that's how I started writing for them.
Now, how different is the media environment now for girls than it was, say, 20 or even 10 years ago?
You know, I think when it comes to media, it's always been fairly sexualized when it comes to women. That hasn't changed. But I think really the message is becoming much more pervasive, and it's starting at a much younger age. We see at SPARC, we see stores that sell stripper poles for 5-year-olds and crotchless panties for 11-year-old girls. And that is something that we've never had to encounter before.
So we're seeing that in the way products are marketing. Are there other ways that you're seeing the whole media environment change to be more sexualized and probably to younger girls too, I guess?
Well, not only in marketing products, but also in television shows and music videos, in movies. Everything seems to revolve around sex and sexuality, which is fine and acceptable, but especially in movies and TV shows that are targeted to young girls, that's even a theme in those type of programming, which is a little bit problematic when you realize that the viewing audience is not of an age in which they should necessarily be exposed to hypersexualized images.
I know one of the sort of sets of ads that I often hear brought up are the ones by American Apparel. How do they differentiate between amongst genders in their ads?
Well, if you go on the American Apparel website, which anyone can do at home right now, and you go to the men's section and you look up socks, you will see a fairly generic selection of men's legs wearing socks. Now, if you go to the women's section of the website and look up socks, not only are they women wearing socks, but they're women in very provocative positions, typically pin-up poses with, you know, underwear on that's showing a lot of their behinds, being very, very sexualized. And there's really no reason why the female version of socks can't be exactly the same as the male version of socks, and yet American Apparel has found a way to sexualize their female models, which they aren't doing to their male models.
Now, I understand that Lego, which I always thought of as a totally gender-neutral toy, is now marketing to girls. Can you tell us about that?
Lego has just released a new product line, which they call Lego Friends. And Lego Friends is marketed specifically towards girls. The interesting thing about Lego Friends, and I think it's great that Lego wants to, you know, engage girls in creative play, but the Lego Friends line is very, very pink. It's sort of comparable to Barbie or Polly Pocket, except there are some Lego blocks thrown in. Basically, the premise is that there's a group of young girls who are the Lego Friends, and they each have a job. There are very great things about the Lego Friends line, such as one of the girls is an inventor, and she has an inventor's workshop. But it just so happens that all of her tools and everything she uses to create in her workshop are pink and purple. And there's nothing wrong with pink and purple, but I think we need to be offering girls pink, purple, red, blue, brown, orange, not bright pink, baby pink, purple, magenta.
Yeah, most of us, when we're using our tools, don't really actually think about the color of them.
Exactly.
I understand that Spark had a response to that media campaign that LEGO put on.
We did. We started a petition on change.org and got over 50,000 signatures of people who also felt that this was not an appropriate thing for LEGO to do. We also offered some suggestions to LEGO, if they were willing to listen to us, about what they could do to make LEGO more inclusive. The problem isn't that LEGO itself is gendered towards boys. It's that LEGO's marketing now is completely targeted towards young boys. LEGO is only sold in the boys' toy aisle. All of the children in LEGO commercials are boys. All of the children in LEGO packages are boys. So they come out of this wondering why girls aren't buying their products, not looking at how they've been marketing them for the last few years. So we really tried to engage with LEGO, and right now we're in the works of trying to set up a meeting with them at their headquarters in New York to hopefully be able to sit down and talk to them about what is exactly problematic about their friends line and what they can do to help.
Ness, do you see a connection between this kind of gender stamping of products and the overall sexualization in the media environment?
I do, for sure. Someone in Sexed Up Kids mentioned that there are years of play as children that girls have in which play is solely focused on who is the fairest of them all. You know, princess play, Disney princesses are huge right now. It's who is the fairest, who is the prettiest, who is the prince going to love more? And it really is a very short step between who is the prettiest and who is the hottest, who is the most desirable. So I think when we kind of tell girls, and even if you look at when you meet a young girl on the street, say a four-year-old or a friend's child, you know, it's very hard not to have the first thing you say to them be, oh my goodness, you're so pretty. And I think we really need to analyze the language we use with little girls and realize that there are more important things that we should be complimenting them on other than how pretty they look.
What are some of the consequences for girls of this sexualized world that they grow up in?
You know, I think a lot of people, parents especially, are focused on the fact that their kids are having sex. And I would like to offer that teenagers have always had sex and probably will always have sex. I think what we should be concerned about is, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, there was a pressure on teenage girls to engage in sexual activity by boys who were maybe more ready to be involved in those activities. Now, not only is there a pressure to engage, but there's a pressure to perform. It's not good enough anymore to just have sex. You need to have sex in a way that is a performance. You need to engage in activities that are a performance to the male partner if you're having heterosexual sex. And it's definitely scary when you look at these girls who maybe aren't developing the tools they need to express enthusiastic consent or express their desires and be clear about their boundaries. And I really worry about what that means for these girls when they grow up. And how are they going to develop healthy sexual relationships if they're not exposed to those things in the way that the majority of people are in their formative teenage years when they start being sexual and they start to discover what is and isn't okay with them? And I feel that these girls maybe aren't given the tools to develop that within themselves and set themselves up for really healthy adult sexual relationships.
What role can an organization like Spark play?
We really try not only to bring the attention to these companies that are marketing to young girls, marketing really inappropriate products to young girls. We really want to shine a spotlight on them because a lot of people aren't aware that these things are going on. We also like to be an organization, you know, we're very, the leaders of Spark sparked, the adults who started the movement are amazing at making sure that it is about us, it is about the writers, it is about the girls who are living it right now. And I think it's good to have people like us, because we do come from a wide array of backgrounds. Like you mentioned at the beginning, Rachel and Julia and Ileana are completely different, unique individuals. And I think it's really good for people to have a place to go where they can see young girls who are engaged in their communities and they care about this issue and they're really kind of trying to make a positive change. And I think it's good to have young, positive role models for girls and having a place for them to go where they can find us.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Are there role models that girls can look to in the media who have resisted this push to become sexualized?
I definitely think there are. I know some of the other girls at Spark are a very big fan of the singer M.I.A. M.I.A. is typically very political. She is a woman of color. I believe she is Canadian, potentially a Canadian immigrant, but she has never allowed herself to be sexualized. If she is ever sexual in a video or in a performance, it is under her, it's under her control and it's her choice. And I think when we look at women, and it's important not to frame sexuality as bad, because it's not. It's just really important to frame it as nobody should be allowed to sexualize you without your consent. And I think when we look at women like MIA, who are very talented, who have won awards, who are famous, and who are making a difference, and see that they got that way without having to be hypersexualized, I think that's a really good message to be sending to young girls.
And what role do you think that parents can play, or other adults who are involved in girls' lives, what role can they play in helping girls to negotiate becoming sexual, but in a way that doesn't harm them?
I really, truly believe that it's very important for parents to develop open communication with their children about sex. I know that it's awkward for both parents and children to have to talk about those types of things with their kids, but, you know, I think it's really important for young teenagers to have someone to go to if they have questions. And if they are feeling pressured, they can tell somebody and maybe talk about how they're feeling and whether or not they truly are comfortable engaging in whatever activity someone is hoping that they're going to engage in. I think if you have parents who are open and willing to talk to you about sex and sexuality, you're going to be less likely to give in to what your peers are telling you about sex, because you have informed, open, and honest communication with someone who has been there and has done a lot of the things that you're thinking of doing. And I think parents really need to play an active role in sex education for their children. And, you know, we're very lucky in Canada to receive comprehensive sex education, and I think that's really important, and I think that's something that we should be very proud of and we should continue to develop. But there are a lot of things that aren't covered in a basic public school sex ed class. We don't often talk about consent and what that means, and we don't often talk about intimacy. And we don't often talk about things like masturbation that I'm sure the majority of young teenagers are exploring and are thinking about. And, you know, I think a really big problem that we have with young people being sexual, especially young girls, is that they're shamed for it. And they're made to feel bad and they're made to feel guilty. And I feel like that's a really dangerous way to frame sexuality if you're hoping to set up this generation to be healthy sexual adults.
I'm very curious about your site at sparksummit.com. Tell me about that. Like, who's it for, and what kind of topics would you see when you come there?
At Spark, we have a group of girls who act as our bloggers. I'm one of them, but it's a fairly large group, and we take on topics such as things that are happening in the media. Right now we have an article up about a new show that has Melissa Harris Perry in it. So we do talk about positive things, but we also post about things that we see in the media that are really problematic. When the Amber Cole thing went down a few months ago, where a girl in the States, a 15 or 16-year-old girl, performed oral sex on a boy behind a school and was videotaped, and the tape was leaked on the internet, and everyone attacked her. No one attacked the boy that actually broke the law. I wrote a blog about that, and I shared how, you know, we shouldn't be framing Amber Cole as someone who is bad, because that's something that, you know, personally, I'm very lucky that nothing like that had happened to me when I was young and maybe not critically thinking about my behavior. So we really do try not to focus solely on the negative things that are happening in the media. But I think it's a really good place for parents to come if they're looking to become more informed on what media sexualization is. I think it's a good place for teenagers to come if they also want to get informed on what media sexualization is. And I think it's important to remember that all of these articles are written by girls who are, I think our youngest members are 14 and the oldest ones are 23. So it's written by a pretty large range of young women who are living these experiences. And I think if we're going to talk about something like that, you need to hear straight from the source what's happening.
Well, I'm pretty stoked to hear that a place like that exists. So, thank you for being involved in it, and I'm gonna be jumping on and seeing what's there pretty soon.
Excellent.
Okay, great talking with you, Ness.
Great, thank you. You too.
Bye bye now. I've been speaking with Ness Fraser. She blogs on sexuality and relationships at SparkSummit.com.